Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for Wednesday, March 28th. I'm Sanka Price, and I'll be your moderator for this program, which finishes today at 2 p.m. Graeme Vaughan is our producer and the first voice you'll hear when you call us at 4341790. Of course, you can also participate by contacting us via WhatsApp at 266-4862. Before going to the phone lines, I'd like to share a few thoughts. First, on behalf of Starcom Network, I'd like to offer condolences to the loved ones and relatives of the five individuals who died in tragic circumstances over the last 5 days. That is the three young men who were stabbed to death, the teacher who perished in the vehicular accident, and the young woman who was burnt in the vehicle on Long Beach yesterday. When people die unexpectedly from natural causes, it is extremely hard on loved ones. So you can therefore imagine the immense trauma they're having today because of the manner in which their loved ones' lives were snatched away in such a cruel, senseless manner. Like many of the callers to this wonderful program, I too can't help but wonder why there's such a high level of aggression among Barbadians today. It is one of the worst developments that has taken place in this country and needs to be weeded out. I urge those of you who believe in prayer to kneel in reverence and do so as earnestly this weekend to help rid this country of this violent streak that has permeated our society. We'll be right back after this commercial break to get it out to brass tacks. Welcome back. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today. My second thought relates to the issue of vote buying. Prime Minister Frondell Stewart's recent advice to Democrat Labour Party supporters that they should accept money if it is being shared around in the forthcoming general elections sends conflicting signals about his commitment to combating vote buying. His advice is certainly at odds with his pledge on election night in 2013 to deal with this problem. And it certainly conflicts with his condemnation of irregular voter activity reportedly committed in the St. Michael North East constituency in the 2013 poll. On the line is Dr. Dwayne Devenish, a senior lecturer at the University of the West Indies. Dr. Devenish, along with Dr. Celia Karch-Brathwick, conducted a survey 3 years ago to ascertain Barbadians' experience with vote buying. Good morning, Dr. Devenish.
Hi, good morning, Sanka.
Thank you very much for holding. Had a bit more commercial than I anticipated. Can you outline to the Brass Tacks family your findings on this whole aspect of vote buying?
Okay, let me first draw some caveats. One caveat is that I'm not a political scientist. I am a behavioral scientist. And to be honest, all credit really goes to the late Dr. Karch-Brathwick. But as a behavioral scientist, I believe that this still sits squarely into my portfolio, so to speak. Now, these findings were, as you know, were reported in the Sunday Sun. And I particularly look at certain segments of the findings. I wanted to look at a particular demographic profile that was predisposed to accepting gifts or monetary or material gifts in exchange for their vote. And the findings, I think the main findings were that younger persons, those within the 18 to 34 age group, those who were unemployed, those who expressed a dissatisfaction with life in Barbados, those with no political party leaning or ideology were most likely to report that they would accept material gifts or some form of monetary donation in exchange for their vote. So that pretty much is summary of the point.
Well, Dr. Devenish, if you're saying that it was like young people, those unemployed, dissatisfied with life in Barbados generally, et cetera, are the ones who would more than likely take bribes, for votes. The situation has worsened in the last few years. what is the likelihood then that those same people or people of that demographic group would likely be willing to accept money, and how that can and that certainly would be able to influence the outcome of our next general election?
Well, clearly, that's the thing. You just said it. This situation is much worse than 2013, and you could imagine that these findings clearly would repeat themselves. I mean, if you look at more social and economically depressed communities, I'm talking about areas like Haynesville, the Deacons, the Ivy, the Pine, these are particular communities that would be more likely, the residents of which would be more likely to be target of vote buy-in. I would say that this is further compounded by the fact that persons who, of course, are unemployed, if you look at the profile, again, this is the young male who's unemployed. It also serves, it reckons up in our mind, this is, you know, could it be the boy on the block who can be easily swayed, who may not have a political ideology or political party leaning to one candidate or the other. These are persons who are vulnerable and are easily swayed by monetary demands or by the wells of vote buying. So yes, I agree with you. This would definitely be worse in this particular period, as we call the silly season.
did they say how much money was on offer generally?
Well, that's the thing. We wanted to do a preliminary survey on the fact that how people felt about being approached by persons who are willing to purchase votes. We didn't actually indicate the amount of money. In fact, I'm looking to do a follow-up study to examine the dynamics of the vote buying approach. For example, as you said, the size of the gift, does that make a difference? And to what demographic? I also want to look at also going across communities, low income and high income. Because remember, vote buying means different things to different people. So how people perceive vote buying. Because in a higher income, there's expectation that you're not going to be in any way swayed by a vote buyer. But perhaps if the stakes are high enough, you never know. So those are things I'm looking to follow up on. But the research was simply a preliminary assessment of whether it actually makes a difference.
You said how people perceive vote buying. The reality is that a number of politicians pay light bill, they pay for the gas bottle, they pay for the water bill. Some people are now offering vouchers for the supermarkets and whatnot. That's actually going on right now. Would that not constitute some form of monetary persuasion to get voters on your side?
Well, and here's the thing: it's a two part thing, you know, because there's the vote buying and there's the vote selling. Because to the extent to which these acts that you just described influence, encourage, sway voters to make a decision as to a particular choice, in this case, a candidate choice, then that is construed vote buying. You see, I think the problem that we have is a situation where how do we characterize vote buying from other efforts that might very well be public service? You see, for example, you see, when you look at certain questions, did the perpetrator give a gift in order to influence voters to cast their votes in favor of a particular candidate? And the thing about it was the value of the gift sufficient to influence the voter? These are things that would have to be discussed even in a court setting, because for this to be characterized as vote buying, there are certain conditions that have to apply. I think that's the complexity of the definition, even from a legal standpoint, that we still have to face.
And those conditions would be, you need to spell it out. What would those conditions be?
Well, let me give you some questions. Let's look at it from the point that I just mentioned. Was the giver, the candidate, an agent or third party? As you know, some candidates or some political parties might use middlemen. Now, a middleman might come, and I give you a story from a particular country that I was in. I won't call the name of the country, but we had situations where certain middlemen provided transportation, provided the means for certain electors to get to the poll, and it was almost because of the reciprocity of it. People argue that it encouraged for these electors to vote in a particular way. The question of...
That's a standard thing here in Barbados.
Well,
that is standard. I mean, that is...
You see, and that's where it becomes even more difficult. Was the gift given to voters directly or to others, such as the use of like the family, close ones? Did they give the gift as on behalf of the candidate? Or, you know, so these middlemen can easily kind of dampen the, or let me say, put a cloud of uncertainty when it comes to defining what is vote buying. And here's the other thing. Was the giver in a position to pressure the voters to give their vote, such as withholding an expected gift until after they voted? We heard about the situation in the last election, 2013, where people were only given the money if photos were taken. I'm not sure, I mean, it was an allegation, but not sure from your standpoint if anyone was prosecuted in this case, but photos were taken.
Well, that is the thing that the Prime Minister made the point. The Prime Minister, when he was speaking in St. Peter, he asked, and I'm just quoting from the newspaper, he rhetorically asked, what were the surrounding circumstances that would have impelled that young lady to the belief that she had to satisfy Miss Motley that she voted for her? That is what the Prime Minister said, suggesting that the person, you know, there was something going on there. but the thing about it is what concerns me right now, and I think anybody who is thinking about this whole talk about vote buying, is where you have a situation, if you have a file, why don't you pass the file on to the Director of Public Prosecutions? Because clearly that would dispel any notion of politicking. Because, you know, it suggests to me that the evidence may not be as strong as being reported so far. You know, just like the whole situation of the legal education certificate where you try to prosecute Ms. Motley in the court of public opinion. So I think that the Prime Minister really has at this stage to pass that file on to the Director of Public Prosecutions, because the only way that there's going to be any credibility of any statement he makes in future on these matters has to be based on the evidence that's there. And
okay. Sorry, Sankar. Sorry.
You
had me excited on the point that it goes back to evidence, but it also goes back to a deeper issue that we have. Mm-hmm. I believe there's a lack of political will in terms of when it comes to enforcement. You see, in terms of the legislation, I mean, the legislation has its problems. For example, let me just talk about that point. One of the problems in the legislation, and specifically we're looking at the Election Offences and Controversies Act, is the fact that, yes, it's vote buying is fine, but even the consequences, the penalties, are very ill-defined. The other problem is that it's actually stipulated that offenders are to be fined or imprisoned in very limited or restricted cases. In a case where, like, for example, if vote buying occurred on the public road in the public place or on election day or within 100 yards of a polling station, when in fact vote buying can occur long before election, and it can occur in any jurisdiction, any sector. It doesn't have to be 100 yards in polling station. So we still have to do a lot of work on the legislative side in terms of really clarifying and improving the legislation on vote buying. But here's the other problem I was mentioning, the enforcement side. How can you, we're looking at evidence, but unless you equip your police officers, for example, to either have a rapid vote buying surveillance mission where you go through various communities to inspect and to actually investigate this as a crime as they would do with any other crime, we are just making sport. You know, the idea is that we need to at the same time support the enforcement party to allow them to do their work, to collect the evidence. And as you just said, then we have to have the political will to transfer that evidence into something that can be pushed to the law court. Hello?
Yes. Sorry, my phone was down. And I'm just going to let someone here respond to you on the WhatsApp. They're saying, we can talk all over our faces about vote buying. It is wrong. How about this question? May political party campaign funding be considered statutory board position buying?
Oh, interesting. That's interesting. All I can say in terms of, by way of political party financing, that too has to be regulated, though, because there is a relationship between political party financing and vote buying, you know. Because remember, if I have a source, and a well-known source, and a well-resourced source that can provide me with the wherewithal, I can use those money alongside, if I'm the government, by the way, the state machinery, to push and to encourage vote buying. Okay? Now, here's the thing. In other jurisdictions where they've regulated political party finance and they've allowed for things like disclosure to be actually had, so you know exactly the source. And then there are also ceilings or limits on donations from various donors going to political parties. So those are things that we got to look at and really have a conversation about. But Sanka, he's correct, though, because vote buying has it's historical. It's entrenched in our culture. I can be honest, going back to the days of Barrow and our first premier, prime minister, vote buying is a chronic thing throughout our history. So, you know, it's something that we have to tackle seriously, as I said before. The other issue that outside of enforcement, though, I would like to push is civic education. I think, you know, we can talk about enforcement, we can talk about legislative powers and so forth that should really be installed, but if you're supposed to really hit the heart of vote buying, I think that we need to do a greater work in educating the public about the significance of a vote. It's linked to upholding democracy in a country. We also have to look at educating the public about the consequences of vote buying and vote selling. You know, a lot of people don't know that the vote seller is just as guilty as the vote buyer. And people need to know what are those consequences for someone who is caught selling their vote or selling vote in a given constituency or community. That is something that we need. I don't think people are educated sufficiently about the consequences or the ramifications. Again, this goes back to legislation. Mm-hmm. Are those penalties clearly defined and laid out? Those are things that you
so
know.
So what do you suggest for the upcoming election, given the concern that has been raised about vote buying? Do you think that there should be some sort of education campaign mounted by the EBC, by the Electoral and Boundaries Commission?
Absolutely. Sanka, I call for anti-vote buying campaigns, not only pushed by political parties and all, but these are things that are in other countries. They are pushed by the NGOs, the civil society groups. For example, I can give you some information here, right? You have a situation in Brazil, for example, that there's anti-vote buying campaigns where they have slogans on everybody's doors. Like, for example, votes don't have a price. They have consequences. The other thing is that you have places like in Taiwan, there were produced stickers. These were electoral stickers with messages such as "My family doesn't sell votes." You know, if we can have those kinds of campaigns where people could understand that your vote is worth more than $1,000, your vote is worth more than $100,000, your vote is worth more than $1 million, then we are at the start of changing. Is a mindset that we are changing. You know. So it has to be something that has to be driven from all sectors, not just political parties, private sector, civil society. But here's the thing. Here's a joke, Sanka. You know, somebody came to me and said, you know, those findings were interesting in newspaper, you know. The idea that you were able to identify the persons who were most likely to be approached and most likely to accept the vote buying attempts. But guess what? You've painted a market, perhaps, for political party candidates. No. Because think about it, if you look at it from the other side, I may very well have painted a potential market for vote buyers. Because if I know that 18 to 35-year-old males, unemployed, people are dissatisfied, then could it be that my political movement may very well be targeting these persons now? You know, so I really want people to take the findings seriously and to use the findings in more constructive ways of let's see what we can do in terms of addressing the legislation. Issues of enforcement, issues of lack of political will, and issues of civic education, where we have a kind of a long-standing program or campaign to educate the public about vote and the significance of vote and vote buying in particular.
All right. Dr. Devins, thank you very much. But before you go, I need to ask you a question here as a behavioral scientist. The Natalie Haywood factor, where do you think there's so much traction?
Well, the Natalie factor, I didn't want to get into that one, but I would imagine, you know, Barbadians love, I shouldn't say Barbadians, Caribbean people in general love novelty. And it's novel when you can have someone who comes from a particular area of life, who perhaps from others may be seen as someone who, you know, elevated to, you know, potentially to a high political level in the country. I mean, those are things that people like to applaud. I mean, we love success stories too. The fact that, you know, you can look at it from the other side, that this young lady now coming from a particular life, she's perhaps changing, transforming her life to serve the country and to serve Bridgetown in particular and the needs, because she understands it best, because she, that's the home from which she has grown. So I think it's a question of novelty. We like novelty. We like new things. I mean, on the other side, there are people who are making a lot of jokes about it. So they love the comedy, perhaps, that is attached to it. So that's all I can say, really, about the Nally phenomenon. But if you go back in other countries, look at Trump. I mean, Trump was, he was a big entertainment guy. He was in wrestling, and he used to make a lot of jokes in comedy and so forth. I mean, outside of the fact that he was a very, I'm not sure how successful, but he was a businessman. There were other things about Trump that people gravitated to, and it was the novelty of it, that this guy that had no political training, no political experience, was able to contend and won the presidential election. So, you never know.
Dr. Devnis, thank you so very much for your time.
And thank you, Stanker.
You're all welcome. Right. We'll take a commercial. All the best to you. We'll take a commercial break, and we'll be right back for the phone lines. Welcome back. It's 10:33. With Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, sir. And you?
Okay, fine. Prior to the dissolution of Parliament, I used to do some what we call subtraction. I used to count down on the days, but now I'm currently adding up the days. And I count all of these days since the dissolution of Parliament.
How many days is this, though?
It's
22 gone?
Yes, not gone.
Okay.
And what I would like to say, I would like to suggest to the people of Barbados to punish this government with their votes for every for every day that passed.
All right, hold a second. Okay, fine. That is ridiculous, as you said, and I'm sure I'm going to get several calls callers are going to say a similar thing, and I'm going to get a few other callers who are going to say something separate. But I want you to tell me right now, okay, very briefly.
Right.
What is so bad about this? It's not illegal.
It's not illegal. It's immoral. Everything that is legal, now you something called spirit of the game or the spirit. Like in playing cricket, for instance, there's certain things if you hand the ball, if you're the batsman, you might block the ball and then take the pass it to someone nearby. Actually, if the man of pee, you're out. But generally, fellas don't do that. Because they call it, that's not in the spirit again. If someone, you know.
Yeah, years ago in cricket, you used to walk. As soon as you think you get a nick on the ball, you used to walk. These days, the fellas stand up and look. They don't do their walk. They have to make the umpire put the finger up. I understand what you're saying.
Right. There's certain things that is not
Okay. So you're saying it's...
It's in the law. It's legal, but it's not in the spirit.
All right. But the point about it is the elections are going to come. So why is... Why is there this level of disgust? I mean, I want you to explain that to us. You tell me, why is there this level of disgust? The elections have to come.
Yes, right?
So wait.
But if your country is drifting, that's where the problem is coming, you know.
You say the country is drifting and is on pause.
Yes.
But I am sure that someone will call here and tell you that, you know, that the buses are still running, that the garbage is still being collected,
yeah,
that you can still go to the hospital and get treatment. So what is the point that you're making here?
The guys, will say this, if people are not, who are not objective, like the overzealous.
But you're not objective. You have.
Yes, I am.
You're saying you want to punish the governments. You can't be objective.
No. I'm objective because not only me as an individual saying this, you got the business sector saying this. You know, the business sector, the banking, almost, you know, you could call almost everyone because that you cannot plan what's happening in the country. Now, Barbados is in such a perilous position, that you can't afford to just drift along. And that's what this government is doing. It's just drifting, right? Now, that's so much, I guess, I want to say about this. Another example of...
You don't want to talk about the vote buying?
I think you all said a lot about the vote buying.
All right, you go ahead.
Now, the Prime Minister, right, well, I don't know what anyone could trust him after this, because he had so much to say in the last election, even when he spoke in St. George. He said that when people were saying, the former administration was saying, put money in people's pocket, and he was saying, yeah, there are guys out there, lots of guys out there who, I guess he was insinuating something, who could put money in your pocket, but at that stage he was saying not to accept money in your pocket. No, but I would like to touch on the issue here with the former CARICOM ambassador, Mr. Bobby Morris. Now, obviously, I look at this as another example of a party putting itself and its party faithfuls before the country, the needs of the country. On the 2nd of December 2011, Mr. Bobby Morris became the CARICOM ambassador with much fanfare. He even set himself a target of 1 year in which he will see substantial progress towards the new Barbados and Trinidad Fishing Agreement, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, Mr. Morris retired without a whimper. I only recognize that he had retired when I saw it sometime in 17 December last year, when they described him as a retired CARICOM ambassador. On the 10th of January, I was even more surprised and shocked when I saw one Miss Veronica Griffith being presented with a Barbados Silver Award for her contribution to the labor movement, right? And she was labeled as the Barbados designate to CARICOM, right? 2 days later, she was accredited, as Barbados CARICOM ambassador. What makes this so strange? You just had a couple of months to go before this administration, at the end of this administration. What is the haste? And you know what I find curious? Why would someone retire a couple of months prior? I don't think someone will retire and just go home without any funds. So I'm wondering if Mr. Morris had retired, and now he's currently working for the party as their political advisor. I hope he's not being paid out of the public purse. I really hope this.
Well, he can't be being paid out of the public purse if he is no longer part of the whole apparatus. And as you said, he has retired.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you can't make that. He will not be making that suggestion.
Not as the CARICOM ambassador.
He's not the CARICOM ambassador any longer.
But could he be being paid as a consultant?
Well, it is possible that he's a consultant in some form or the other. I mean, government has the need for consultants in a whole range of areas that we don't even hear about. But if the cabinet ministers need some advice, some specialist advice in some area, they should always have some expert to be able to speak to that, and that's why you have consultants.
If he is an advisor to the DLP, DLP is a separate entity from the government, from the cabinet. He should not
I understand what you're saying, but don't mix them up. Mr. Morris was the campaign manager last time for the Democratic Labour Party, and he was the campaign manager last time, you know. In 2013, and he did an extremely good job because the Democrat Labour Party won the government. So, if he's back there, we're fine.
But okay, I just wanted
you have one more minute.
Yes, okay. I just wanted to touch a little bit with the Natalie situation when the guy was saying something about novelty. I don't think it's a matter of novelty. Mm. I think it's an issue where the sociologists in Barbados are not on top of. Now, if you look at what's happening in Barbados, there's a whole paradigm shift happening in the country or happening in Barbados that the sociologists did not pick up. I think this is a sociological issue. Now, if you look at in the case of, like, you got, once, a couple of years ago, people used to call it a subculture that we had emerging. I no longer call that a subculture. I call that a parallel culture, where the people that used to do the things like, well, what we would consider subculture, they're about 50-50 now. The people that in Barbados who are doing the usual things that we would look on as the normal things are being scoffed at or being looked at. And these the ones that who we see before as a subculture, look at what's happening now to what's the basketball soccer. Look, the soccer artists that we call the lyrical artists.
All right, let me just cut you there because I want to ask you this one question very quickly because I have a whole set of calls here lined up. You're saying that there's a parallel culture existing. The question I have for you,
parallel.
Right? The question I have for you now is, in your opinion, how do you think that this can impact our society? How do you think this will impact going forward?
If you look in the society, you will see how it's impacting. If you look in the society, see what is happening, you will see how it's impacting. It's impacting negatively on the society.
All right.
But I think the sociologists in Barbados,
they need to get up to speed with that. All right. Well, thanks, sir, look, thank you for your time. Thank you for your call. Really appreciate it. We take another call. Good morning.
Hello, hi. Good morning, Sanka. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Wesley. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all.
You held on for a long time.
Of course. You know how it is with thing, right? When something is good, you know, it's worth waiting for.
I'm happy that you think that Brass Tacks is good enough that it's
worth waiting for. No, Brass Tacks is good. Don't get tired. Brass Tacks is good. Brass Tacks is, you know, I don't know how far up Brass Tacks can go, but because Brass Tacks is on the top level. Don't get tired, you know. Anyhow, look, I want to say this, and I want to mention it on behalf of a childhood friend. This is a childhood friend, but it's not my main point. This is just in passing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend that operates out of the office sometimes in the government post that he holds, right? His job take he round to districts, avenues, mostly doing the government business, okay? And he obviously uses his own vehicle and many other people in the government sector, okay, or in the public sector use the own vehicle to do this kind of exercise. I don't want to pinpoint the type of job he does because that is slimming it down too far.
Is he having a problem with traveling, being paid?
He has a problem with traveling, with his allowance for traveling. And it's putting immense pressure on the guy, you understand? Because he depends on this traveling along with many other people in that department. And it's not fair, right?
Why I ask is because I have a message here. Mm-hmm. I'm a government worker and I have not received my traveling for February. And I'm mm-hmm. very annoyed. We get our traveling with our salary.
Mm-hmm.
So the person is saying that they're not getting their traveling. So
you can see I'm not mad factoring this thing, right? Yes. I could go a little further, but
you make your main point.
Good. Okay. I'm not trying at all to start fireworks. Okay. Now I want to tell you this here, Banker.
Mm-hmm.
Fireworks is what start me calling poor Rams. Okay. And if I have to choose between Brass Tacks, even though I just give it high kudos, right, and fireworks, I would choose fireworks over and above Brass Tacks. If they tell me, okay, you can only make a contribution to one program, I will make my contribution to fireworks when it's season art. Now, 25 years ago, there was the tents. I want you to walk with me with this here. I'm not turning your program into fireworks. There was the tents. There was something called semifinals, finals of course, Rishtung Market, Kahablapot, Grand Kaduman. There was the main activities for the foundation. All right. Mm-hmm. Today, Krapova is moved far beyond that. The point that I want to make to VOB is that you have to get somebody that is well aware and well knowledgeable that could pick apart these different activities that are happening in Krapova. In other words, this person that you're putting in place, okay, to do the fireworks program, have to be in tune with all the different aspects of the festival, all right, because it has changed. I know Larimer started fireworks 25 years ago, but fireworks 25 years ago only had about four things surrounding Krapova. Today, there are over 100 different activities. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I
do. And when you're listening to fireworks, you want people that are knowledgeable. Carol do a good job, but Carol is not the lead. Carol is not the lead on fireworks. Okay? So I am saying that if I is to be concerned with the fireworks brand, okay, I would not like what happened last year, right, where fireworks was a no-show. It was definitely a no-show because Larry Mears did not. He was not up to speed with the festival.
All right, Wesley. You made the
and
point.
And I said that,
yeah, but
Sanka. I said that, Sanka, because when David Ellis finished speak to me last, he hit me behind my back, said, man, I can't control the brass stats. Like, he won't control fireworks and this. I'm not trying to control
anything. But Wesley, hold tight. You made your point.
Mm-hmm.
It's being heard by everybody. Okay, you want to see something different with fireworks, and you explain why. Is there another point you want to make?
I would just like if Dennis Johnson sat back in the chair for fireworks, honestly.
Well, thank you. Anyhow, Wesley, have a good day. You're on Brass Tacks. Good morning. It's 10:50.
I'm not trying to
turn off your radio, sir. Sir, turn off your radio, please. I'm getting a lot of feedback here.
Everybody, okay, you want...
We got to get another call. This is Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, sir. Yes,
good morning.
I would like... Well, I like a song played.
Excuse me?
A song. I would like. Well, I don't know. You can tell me where you can refer this to. Our principal's birthday is today, so we would like this song. I like myself by Lil Rick played for her. What is it? 92.9 that we would use, or? And
you, you are 92.9. You're right now. You're live on Brass Tacks. And okay, just hold. We wouldn't do requests here like that. But we want to say who your principal is, and so that you can actually give her birthday greetings. We don't normally allow this, but
okay.
Go, very quickly, who's the name of the principal?
It's Hyacinth Harris, Mrs. Hyacinth Harris.
And which school is this?
St. Bartholomew Primary.
St. Bartholomew Primary. And so all the staff want to wish her a very happy birthday?
Yes, please. All the staff, ancillary, everyone included.
Are you good?
Teaching.
And what? Why is it that all the staff is so much behind this principal? Is it a case where she is one of those people who really cares about her children and cares about the staff?
What I want to say is that she likes to make every person comfortable at their workplace. and she likes to make school enjoyable.
I see. Well, you have just broadcast that to about 40,000 people, so you've done a very good job.
You can get it.
Anyway. Right. Thank you very much for calling. This is Brass Stats. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. That's me then. Okay, hey, morning. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Yeah, if your style is to talk very slowly, very measured, so that everyone will hear every word, and that is your style, I suppose that is your style. But, you know, it becomes an issue if it is that you realize that there are people waiting for you to finish delivering so that they too can participate. But that is your style. That is how you deliver. So when it comes now to individuals now to be part of the program, you come through. Hurry up. We don't have time for this. And that, to my mind, record, that suggests to me a level of insult that's paid to callers that really and truly has not been attained up to this point. Now, if you have a people's parliament, I'm thinking a people's parliament.
Hold on. Stop.
Critique. It is a criticism.
Stop right there. Okay. I heard you yesterday. I know where you're coming from. If you have another point, bring your next point. But we ain't going on that line.
I'm a consumer of a particular campaign that you guys are advertising to the public. And as a consumer, I have some cause.
Brass Stacks, good morning. Sorry, we take a commercial break at this point.